chipping her elbow and nearly drowning. Possibly the craziest thing to happen on the set of James Cameron's Titanic occurred August 9th when 80 members of the Titanic crew became sick, complaining of hallucinations. After many of them were hospitalized, it was discovered that someone spiked their lobster chowder with PCP.
Are you kidding me?
Good no. God. That's fantastic. Good that's Lord. Realism right there.
Not actually. That's such a
this
PCP.
This boat's sinking! Dude,
they're like, yeah, it's supposed to. It's the Titanic.
Make this as real as possible, everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. They filmed that in Mexico. We went down to the set when I was younger.
That's right.
And then my best friend's grandmother, she was an extra in the actual movie.
Nice.
And we were that close to getting on.
Like, would have been awesome.
To cut off.
But the problem is...
They said women and children first.
Well, they already shot... Yeah. The problem was they already shot all the scenes with all the kids because there was really no kids on the boat, yeah. Really. So we're like, oh, I'm going to be in Titanic. And you can spot her for like a split second, and she gets taken out by a bunch of people falling off the boat.
Dude,
so
I was so pissed. I was an extra in Jerry Maguire, and I could not find myself at all.
What?
Really?
That's awesome.
Because I was going to ASU at the time.
Yeah, it was shot here.
Oh, it was?
Yeah, it was shot here.
I got caught the ball.
And he was a Sun Devil?
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. And then Tom Cruise came out and said, thank you, everybody, for coming out to this special.
I'm a crazy little midget.
Dude, he was nice, but...
Oh, yeah, he's so crazy.
It was just kind of... It was cool to have Tom Cruise come out and address you, but
at the
same
time,
as real people. The same time, that was just something that was going around the school. It's like, hey, we're looking for extras for a movie. We're not even allowed to say what it is yet. Just come to the stadium and be part of it. And it's like that. At that time, it's like that. This is a movie. It's going to be called Jerry Maguire, you guys. We can't say much about it. And the fact we appreciate your time here. You guys all did awesome, and you're part of movie history.
There you go.
That's cool.
Oh, my God. That was so freaking awesome. So when it's... Unfortunately, they didn't have many people show up for the casting call, and ASU is a 70,000 seat stadium.
Yeah,
and it was over in the student section, and then the end zone, they had maybe 3/4 of the way full. And then when you see it on TV, it looks like it's freaking full stuffed. Crowd. And so I don't know, like, that if they superimposed people in there, or you know, it's like that. I know it was in the lower bowl, and I was about, I think, the second or third row down in the lower bowl because me and my buddy went, and we just sat.
Should have wore a shirt that made you stand out.
I know.
Bright orange, bright yellow, light yourself on fire, something like that.
I was just a Sun Devil student. I got that same day, so I'd show up that night.
Sun Devils? They fire involved in that?
Yeah.
Should have worn
a shirt. Yeah, you could have dressed up as Sparky.
Yeah,
that's true. But it was the Cardinals game is what they were doing the reenactment of.
Yeah, that's right.
The ironic thing, another thing that's funny about that, too.
Yeah.
It's based off of the Cowboys-Cardinals Monday night Christmas game.
Yeah.
And me and my dad went to that game together, too, ironically.
Huh, that's awesome. Dad, you were really there. Games.
Yeah. And so I was in the realism. I was also in the crowd when they were doing the Al Michaels things, you know, when they were doing the broadcast from that game they took footage from. So I'm going, both times I was there, which is really kind of creepy.
That's awesome.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Ken playing the role of Ken.
That's the year Larry Centers broke the receiving record for running backs.
Nice.
Even though they lost.
This guy.
I'm a Cardinal fan. I don't joke about it. But,
and he's proud of it.
And I was like, you know, I got
hey,
to
this past season, it would be something to be proud of.
Oh, man, every year it's something to be proud of. Just, that's a Cardinal fan talking. That's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, not me.
I can understand.
All right, so we are recording. We are live as of 3.5 minutes ago. So comes naturally, we are...
Joe.
Mike.
I'm Cody. We have a very special guest today. That goes by the name of...
My name's Ken Brown, and I'm the owner of Drawn to Comics, you guys. So thank you for having me on, man.
Well, thank you for having me here.
I work for you guys, actually. I don't own anything. I work for you guys.
So for the first couple minutes here, once you know, get comfortable and you're ready to go, you can do it no matter what. It's going to piss off one of our listeners. We don't care, so it doesn't matter. We know who he is. He hates eating on podcasts.
Clint.
I was going to name his name, but Clint, sorry about that, buddy.
Sorry, sir, Clint.
It's fine.
Can I take another swig real quick?
Yeah, go right ahead. So... on the top of the show, we'll just...
That was for you, Clint. Love you, man.
Yeah. We'll give you a couple minutes just to talk about the shop, who you are, what your history is, and stuff like that, and then we'll go on everything else. So, okay. Take it away.
Okay, cool, dude. Well, pretty much, I've been a comic fan since I was 9 years old. And some people got their early starts when they're in kindergarten, first grade. It took me up until third or fourth grade, to find out that I loved Spider-Man as a kid. I used to watch Spider-Man's Amazing Friends every weekend. Spider-Man, Firestar, Iceman. I used to think that Firestar was actually Jean Grey when I first walked into a comic shop because the Phoenix Saga looked freaking like Firestar to me.
Yeah,
pretty close.
Yeah.
And when I found out that I was at 7-Eleven by my house playing Spy Hunter. Do you guys ever play Spy Hunters, kids?
Yeah.
Good God, dude. Hours of quarters. I mean, I think I kept that Circle K or 7-Eleven in business just by playing Spy Hunter there. Get another Big Goal if you want. Kid, you can play all day. No one's here waiting to get in that game. You go to those video game rooms back then, you had to wait like 5, 10, 15 minutes just to play one quarter, and people, hey, dude, come on, man. It's my turn, dude. Yeah. So that was my 7-Eleven Circle K, and I used to like drawing cars as a kid, too, because I used to want to be a car designer, too. And over in the Motor Trend sections, magazines, Car and Driver, and there was one called Cartoons, which was kind of like comic book versions of a car magazine.
Oh, gotcha. Hmm.
Then, logically, they laid out their inventory with comic books right above that. And I saw a Spider-Man comic where there was like the black costume and a red costume pulling apart Peter Parker. And it's the now infamous Amazing Spider-Man number 258, which makes me real happy because Guardians of the Galaxy 23 fixed Reed Richards' F-up that he did in that issue by scaring Peter Parker away from that costume. Which to me at that point, I was going, how can this be the best and the worst issue of all time? Because at the end of the book, it is he's back in the red and blue costume. But I was so fascinated by that black and white costume, I wanted to find out more. And the way the timelines went, issue 258 was November cover date. Well, they were doing a series called Marvel Superheroes Secret Wars, which is once again relevant again this year, which is kind of fun too, where number 9 was the closest issue, which had a January cover date. And 8 was already sold out. It was a December cover date, which was the month after they already put him back in the red and blue costume. And so I was kind of fascinated immediately about something like that. This is cool, but how do I find more of it?
Yeah.
And so every other Circle K, I remember even on Thanksgiving picking up Secret Wars number 9 when we were going to my aunt's for Thanksgiving. And I go, oh my God, there's another black costume issues, because issues 8 through 12 had the black costume in it.
Yeah.
So I finished reading Marvel Superheroes Secret Wars because of the black costume Spider-Man. And I know this is a long-winded story, so if you need me to keep it shorter, let me know too.
No.
But eventually, there was a drugstore over by the barber shop that me and my dad would get our haircuts out over on 24th Street Indian School, just for geographics of being a Phoenix native here. But after my dad, I was done with my haircut, he let me go to the drugstore and just kind of hang out. You know, there's a comic rack there, and there was comics there I started getting. And then when we were driving home, at 24th Street Indian School, there's a Kentucky Fried Chicken there now. Unfortunately, when I was a kid, the cool thing it was a comic shop.
Ooh.
And it was a bookstore called I'm a Bookstore, but in the window it said comics. And I'm going, Dad! We gotta stop. And he goes, what is wrong? He goes, there's a place that says it has comics and something they actually sell as a regular thing. Can we stop? And I go in, it's like a bookstore up front. I go, this kind of sucks. And we keep on going back. And the comic shop's in the back of the bookshop. And there was like more comics I've ever seen in my life. And I started seeing like black costume stuff on walls. I started seeing the Phoenix stuff on the walls, thinking it was Firestar. And they're going, no, that's not Firestar. That's actually Jean Grey. And I go, no, it's not. It's Firestar. Because I'm, you know, a kid that thinks he knows everything because he likes Spider-Man's Amazing Friends.
Of course.
Yeah.
But then I start asking, I go, how do you guys categorize your comics? Go, well, we do them new books over here and back issues over here, and they're in alphabetical order by title. And I go, well, I've got this comic, Amazing Spider-Man 258, and it's the last time Spider-Man's wearing this costume, but I see he's wearing it at Secret Wars, and he's not wearing it anymore in regular Spider-Man. I don't care about the red and blue costume. It's cool, but this one's awesome. And I go, how do I get more of them? And he goes, they're called back issues. You go and you find the older issues, and they're organized this way. And I go, here are the ones that are here. Like 257 was still like 85 cents, and 256 was still like 85 cents. And, you know, 253, 254, like $1.25. Then 252, the first one, was $4. And I go, why are they all different prices? I'm a kid. You know, I paid 60 cents at 7-Eleven. Why do I have to pay $4 for this first appearance? And they go, it's hard to find. I go, well, what do you mean it's hard to find? Because there's not that many of them out there anymore because it's really popular. You're not the only person that likes black costume Spider-Man. And I'm going, okay, I get it. So how do I know you're not ripping me off? And he goes, there's something called Comics Value Monthly. And Comics Value Monthly more or less has a price guide like a Beckett, if you know sports cards.
Yeah.
And where it tells you what the comic is and what number it is and then what the value it sold at for the past month. I'm going, okay, so can I get this magazine? Because I'm, once again, an energetic 9-year-old kid. What 9-year-old kid that has any passion about anything is not energetic and excited about something they're just newly finding out? And they said, yeah, dude, you could start a subscription for it. And I go, really? I could get this every month, too? And they go, yeah. I go, cool, I'd like to do that. And can I get Spider-Man Anytime Black costumes in it? And then, like, another thing that was interesting, too, at that time was our parents were taking us to Walden Books at the malls, and we were supposed to get a book a month during the weekends. Well, I had two stepbrothers that were twins, and another stepbrother was a younger stepbrother, and they started discovering comics, too. And they were saying, like, can we get three comics rather than one book? And they're saying, my parents, my dad and my stepmom at the time said, yeah, it's fine, you're reading. That's all that matters to us.
Nice.
And one of the ones he picked up was Alpha Flight number 17. And he let me borrow it, and I read it, and I'm going, oh, my God, this is so cool. But once again, I was reading stuff that was the end, or the story was already over, and they're reflecting on stuff. In that issue, it was a reproduction of X-Men number 109. That they used to retell a story after Heather Hudson, the new leader of Alpha Flight, by the time that issue was over, her and Wolverine were reflecting on her dead husband who passed away, number 12. And I'm going, this guy's freaking awesome. He tears through the X-Men and he's dead. And he was the leader of this team. And next thing I know, it's like, I'm interested in another character that's no longer around. And so it instantly got me into back issues right away. And so that's kind of where the early roots and stages and seeds were set for me, understanding not just reading comics, but how to get comics. Does that make sense?
So
that was kind of my first opening, or getting the keys to starting the store today. And as I said, I just learned and learned and learned, because I didn't want to spend too much for comic books, because I was a kid, was pretty much the bottom line on it. And I started learning trends. I started learning things about, wow, you know what? This is kind of interesting. I'm going, I'm a kid that's making money off of what I've been purchasing. And my dad used to always tell me, he's like, don't buy something because it's a good investment, because how are you going to get rid of it? And I go, no, I totally understand, Dad, but I see what patterns work here. And if it works for me, great. If I'm never going to want to sell them anyway, but if I have to, it's nice to know what I have, not get ripped off. And so it was kind of, I just was teaching myself to be a young entrepreneur, even as a kid. And then once it got to seventh, eighth grade, you know, started having other friends that we trade comics with. And in eighth grade, the coolest thing, I think, that started that next step of getting ready to open a comic shop 10 years ago, which is kind of a slow story to get to where we're at when I'm 40 years old. But I apologize, and I thank you guys for your patience on it. But in eighth grade, one of my buddies did the first comic book auction in his backyard that I ever went to. And I thought that was the coolest freaking thing, because we all had comics, but we all couldn't afford everything that we wanted. But other friends had stuff that had different interests that we kind of started trading amongst each other through auction, besides just trading. And that was kind of a fun way, too. It's like that I'm getting money to buy other comics or whatever else I need to buy off of doing these little auctions in our backyard. So I went to about three or four that year, and it was just a blast. And so that was my first real taste of selling comic books. Do you know what I mean? And
like something that was... get it early, keep on going.
Yeah, and it's just some of those things. Like, I didn't realize at that time, but I was developing what would be my long-term future. And I said, too, all through high school, it was kind of sad. In eighth grade, I thought, okay, I need to get rid of this comic bug, because I'm a teenager now and girls are freaking hot.
Good luck.
Exactly, dude. And I did the thing. I was like, hey, Dad, dude, I think I want to get rid of my comic books. He goes, well, how are you going to do that? And I go, I see that I'm always looking in the classified ads to try to find comic collections, because I'd even go to the classified ads in the newspaper to try to find stuff that I was looking for. And my dad took me to a couple people's kind of like Craigslist before there was Craigslist to check out. And he was always with me, so it was safe. And, you know, I bought a couple comics that way even before, you know, I always just going to the store, going to yard sales. And so I said, well, I can do the same thing. Let me try to sell my collection that way. And I put it on a listing of, I took some stuff to a local store of stuff that I knew that was really hot to see what they would give me. And it was like, you know, it was okay. I mean, I was ready to get out of it. And they said, like, hey, we can give you this much in store credit. I go, I don't want store credit. I'm trying to stop collecting. I'm not trying to keep collecting. And he goes, well, how about we give you 100 in store credit and 60 cash? And I'm kind of going, dude, for the books that I wanted to, you know, to bring to him, because the ones that I knew that I could get money for. And I'm going, you know what, that's cool, dude. I'm sure I can find a friend or something that can use the credit, or something we could trade that way maybe. And, you know, I'm not going to say name of the store, because that's irrelevant, but it's a store I still respect greatly. And I've always had good relationships with them. But at the same time, I mean, they always were good to me, so I trusted that's the best they could do, and they weren't going to take advantage of a kid. So that was just the reality that I was dealing with them. And then the rest of them I put inside an ad, because they only bought like 30, 40 books off me. and some G.I. Joes and some a couple Silver Age books that I had, because G.I. Joes were really hot at that time, and I was a G.I. Joe fan too, obviously, just like every other red-blooded boy in 1984 to 1987 at least was.
Guns and boobs.
Exactly. Lady Jade, good God, dude. Yep. Dude.
She's got a crossbow. I got a crossbow.
Yeah.
So anyway, as I said too, the next year freshman high school started, I did sell the rest of my comic collection, unfortunately, for that $60, because I put it up there for $1,200 for the rest of them, because I think I had like another $1,200 left after that, and I wanted just like a buck a piece, and I thought that was pretty fair, knowing what I knew what they were worth, all the research I did. And I had one person come up at like in a Corvette sports car that week, and he says, "You got any Golden Age?" And I'm kind of going, "Nah, dude, I don't have any Golden Age, man." It's like, "All right, thanks for your time." And just took off. Then at the end of the week, this other guy called me up and says, "So, you still have your comics for sale?" And I guess I'm using the same voice for both people. And, you know, it's two different people. So that's my one comic book guy, older guy. I'm a young 13-year-old kid getting ready to go into high school.
They're all the same.
13, 14 years old. And he's like that. "So what you got, kid?" I'm going like, "This is what I got, dude. Look through." And you know what? $1,200 for the whole collection. He goes, $1,200, huh? I go, "How many bites have you gotten so far?" And I go, "Well, I had a guy coming in looking, you know, for Golden Age that was driving around a Corvette. I didn't have any other books. So he took off." He goes, so one other person, huh?" And at this time, I was by myself at the house. My dad was a psychologist, and he would do counseling too, private counseling for people. And, you know, 13, 14 years old, I was old enough to stay home on my own. But, of course, that call comes. And luckily, nothing else worse happened other than me just selling the comics. But, you know, it's like that. I can give you $60 for the whole run. And I go, $60, dude, you're fucking kidding me. Excuse my French, I don't like to cuss, but you know, that's what 14-year-olds say when
historical accuracy.
Yeah. And I'm kind of going like, dude, it's like, well, that doesn't seem too unreasonable since you haven't got any other offers yet. And I go, "Has he got a better, higher offer?" And I go, "No." And so I'm giving you the best offer you've got all freaking week. And I'm going, "You don't have to take it. I'm just saying that's what I'm going to pay for this collection, because there's a lot of common things I can get really easily." And I go, "Okay." And he goes like that, "I'm not ready to sell my books for $60, dude." He goes, "Well, then why'd you put the ad in the paper?" And I said like that, "You obviously wanted to sell your books, or else you wouldn't have put the ad in the paper." And I'm going, "Well, you know, I was like 14 years old. I feel like I'm wasting this guy's time now. He came out of his way to check out my collection." And I'm like that, "Oh, great, dude. Now I'm like in a rock and a hard place type of thing." And I said, "You know what? Logically, he's right. I'm the one that put the ad in the paper. I'm the one that said that I wanted to sell my comics. I wanted $1,200. $60 is the best offer I got all week. My dad's going to be kind of like, dude, see, it didn't work. Do you know what I mean? Like, you thought you were going to get all this money for it. And you know, I was saying like, yeah, he was right. I'm not going to get this much money for comics. I was just kind of like, you know, I bought him because I enjoyed him, but now I don't enjoy him anymore. I'm getting $60. So the guy gave me $60 and he got my books, and he's selling them in his comic shop. This guy's no longer open anymore, and unfortunately he's no longer with us anymore, but things, karma's a bitch, and I think it kind of finally caught up with him about how he was treating people, how buying comic collections. And it's unfortunate, but the good thing that was going on right now is, like, the funny thing I did ask him, it's like, me being just the way I am about my comics, I go, "Hey, dude, do you mind if I keep my Alpha Flight books?" And Alpha Flight 1 through 56 was the only thing out of my collection. The best thing I've done, best thing from it, the fact is that he said, "You just want your Alpha Flight books, that's it?" And I go, "Yep, dude, I'm a huge Alpha Flight fan. John Byrne's my favorite creator." And he goes, "Oh, John Byrne is pretty good. You can keep your freaking Alpha Flight books, kid." Like, he was doing me a favor after it was done, dude. Do you know what I mean? So I still, the only thing I had left my whole comic collection from like 9 years old to 13 years old, and I bought a lot, over 1,000, 1,200 comics. That's why I wanted the buck a piece for them, were my Alpha Flight 1 through 56. I just remember keeping them in before there was long boxes and short boxes I knew about, because I didn't know I could actually buy them. I kept them in my dresser drawers.
Nice.
And so it was in my closet, and it was kind of like
clothes.
Exactly. So I hang
those
up
go
my,
on the floor.
I hang up my clothes, and then I'd put my comics on the floor or on hangers, and then put my comics in the dresser drawer my dad got for me. Kind of funny how that works, but they laid flat and I thought they were safe. And
Corded, they kind of get the bend on them, and it doesn't matter.
I had bags and boards on them, though, too.
But, but when we get our time machine up and running from Kickstarter, we're going to go back, and we're going to beat the shit out of that old guy who stole, robbed you for $60 of your comic collection.
It was very unfortunate what happened to the guy. The guy made some bad choices, but now, unfortunately, those choices caught up with him when he had it. Unfortunately, there was a bad time for comic shop owners out here that people died from unnatural causes of heart attacks, but one guy died of a suicide. And I'm not going to say who the guy was that died from the suicide, but it was the guy that I may have bought my comic collection. And I don't want, you know, people know too much, and I don't want to talk trash about anybody after they're done. Yeah. But at the same time, it's unfortunate how he demised. But he used to smoke cigarettes in a store. He, I'm sure, had other problems.
In
that
a bookstore?
Yeah, and I go, I couldn't go into his comic shop after I found out. You know, I put two and two together when I first walked into his shop, because after I got a car, I started traveling to every single comic shop around. And his shop was still around at that time. I was 16, 17, and me and my buddies would just, that did collect comics. Because I guess, skipping ahead, freshman year in high school, Todd McFarlane was drawing Spider-Man. And once again, I hated the red and blue costume, but 298 and 299 came out in that era of me going from eighth grade to high school. Because 88, I started high school. 87 was when McFarlane started on Spider-Man. And so 298, 299, and 300 were the last issues of Spider-Man that I bought.
There's a relevant date in there. Hey, Mike, what happened in 1987?
Oh, God.
1987?
Yeah.
I was born.
Oh, that's what it was. That's right. That's right.
That was the year I was created.
I was created.
I was hitting puberty, and man, I was hoping that, you know, who knows? I probably know
he
the guy
have
that
created you. Todd McFarlane brought Spider-Man.
Are you from Arizona,
front.
Mike?
Yeah.
What part of town?
Yuma.
Yuma. Yuma. Okay, we're good, dude.
We're safe.
So,
East Scottsdale, South Scottsdale.
Yeah.
Mom did visit there quite a bit.
So anyway, I went to Arcadia High School my freshman year.
Gotcha.
At lunchtime, I was fascinated about how cool McFarlane drew Spider-Man. So the first comic I started reading again was Amazing Spider-Man. As I stopped Alpha Flight because I couldn't stand where Alpha Flight was going. I just respected my Alpha Flight collection because that was, to me, John Byrne 1 through 28 was one of the best story arcs in comic history, which is really... People saying, like, are you fucking kidding me? Excuse my French again. You, Alpha Flight 1 through 28 is one of your favorite storytells of comic history. And I go, John Byrne's a genius. He really knows how to write comics differently than other writers. He was the Brian Michael Bendis of his era. And a lot of people, you know, say Chris Claremont, stuff like that. But Claremont just did X-Men and Marvel Team-Up and Iron Fist. John Byrne touched freaking everything. He recreated Superman after Crisis. Smallville is loosely based off of Man of Steel number one.
Yeah.
And if you guys have ever read that, you see the parallels. And some people, oh, Superman Birthright is what Smallville's based off of. Mm-hmm. And I go, dude, read Man of Steel number one. You can't tell me that's what Smallville took their plot from. He was never Superboy. He was a football player that was badass. And he left after high school they go to Metropolis, but they built a storyline out of that one issue of, like, this is what we can do to make a non-Superman story idea.
Yeah.
And then obviously, you know, Birthright, same type of thing, but I think Birthright was an homage to Superman Man of Steel by I think Mark Waid and Lionel Francis Yu, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. See, I know my stuff too.
Yeah, well, you own a comic book store, so
excuse me,
gotta hope so.
Had bronchitis last week, so I apologize, you guys, if the coughing and hacking is not as
whatever. It's not as bad as Joe telling people to look at his dick, so it's all right.
It's luckily it's podcast radio.
Yep, that's why we don't do video, because otherwise we'd get in trouble.
We would pay fines.
Yep. So, too much dick on your podcast.
So to make, the longer story a little bit shorter, eventually got back into comics. You know, stayed with it. Always college, I took a little bit of a siesta from it because I couldn't afford it. Got back into it. Onslaught was what brought me back again after seeing Professor X Magneto Mind Merge was pretty freaking awesome. Joe Madureira kept me going, and then the rest I pretty much started deciding, you know what, I went to school for journalism, broadcast business management, minored in small business. So I worked in advertising for Channel 15 until September 11th hit. And that was something that really changed our life because my daughter Kayla was born in 2001, December 30th. And so that is, 15 years after you were conceived. So you could be my daughter's dad, but that's not possible because she looks exactly like me. So just kind of coming back to
it's very true. Yeah.
I call her X23 when she's young.
If you come into
young,
the shop and you see a little kid running around helping people.
And I promise you, I'm not Wolverine and she's not X23, but it's as close to the comic reference I could ever see.
Nice.
Close enough.
She looks like a clone. It's pretty scary. It's pretty awesome. That's
she pops out two little razor sharp claws out of her hands. I'm hitting her in the face.
I'm telling you, dude. Don't mess mess with her a certain way, dude, she'll go ninja ass on you. Yeah,
I will cry in public. I'm gonna give a shit.
Exactly. Dude. She'll make you sing soprano really quickly.
Yeah, she's that height too, just straightforward. Oh, done. Boom. So when did you start your comic shop?
Okay, 2005. Then after that, 2001, September 11th, when you work in media, it wasn't just New York. You had to deal with the fact of like that. I started working at Channel 15 in August of 2000. So I was there about 18 months before I quit in February of 2002. And I loved what I was doing because I was meeting with other small businesses and helping them get their feet off the ground, because I was in charge of developing new small business was my responsibility. And then putting their position of airtime after I sold it to them inside what they call trafficking, and not trafficking as the fact of selling drugs or stuff people down the street.
Yeah.
You were trafficking the airtime you sold.
Like and the weird, then, creepy living love doll that's in the street sign up.
There's a
sex doll out in the... shop across the
in one of the antique shops across the street. It's weird.
I plead the fifth. It's interesting down here sometimes.
We get all kinds of
people that are awesome people and people that are kind of like, hey, dude, I have a right to own a business. I can sell whatever I want until I'm told I'm not allowed to.
Well, they're selling whatever the hell they want. Yeah. That's for sure.
And it's an overall great community down here. I mean, I said too, most of the shop owners are really respectful and he's respectful of the area too. He just wants to sell whatever the hell he wants. And he doesn't cause any problems. It's like it is what it is. But I just got totally sidetracked there. But
10 years ago, basically.
Oh yeah, pretty much like having it was like between 2002 and 2005. I worked working at Foot Locker because I sold the Al Bundy in college. You know, when it came to kids' shoes, ladies' shoes, athletic shoes, I sold any type of shoe you could think of, dude. I mean, if I wasn't a comic expert or a sports expert, I was a shoe expert. Oh, yeah, David Robinson wore the Air Force One. Charles Barkley wore the Air Force One. KJ wore the Converse. Do you know what I mean? It's like that. I could tell you what athlete was wearing different shoes because that's what I was, you know, involved with at that time. It's like, oh, yeah, pointed toe pump. Ma'am, you don't want your foot that far down. That's why, you know, you don't go down in size to try to squeeze your foot in there. That's going to give you calluses, or that's going to give you, I can't remember what it's called, where it starts more or less screwing up your feet. And it's stuff I don't need to know, but I had a knack of taking care of people, no matter what it was. My priority was to make sure they were leaving happy with whatever I helped them with. I mean, what do I give a shit about ladies' shoes? I don't have a closet of ladies' shoes, but that person had a need.
Joe does. Oddly enough, I've seen it. It's
they're not mine.
They're Susan's. They're my wife's. I guess that's true.
Now I have a wife. It makes sense.
But it was just, you know, I guess, I don't know if it's why I was raised. Do you know what I mean? Just more or less the fact of, like, look out for other people as much as you want to look out for yourself. Because you don't want to be treated like crap, so why treat other people like crap? And it was just, it translated into the business world too as well. And, you know, like that when I was, eventually I worked from Foot Locker, and then I love comics, and I've known the owner of Atomic Comics since I was a kid too as well. And he was the one that was running the comic section for that I'm a bookstore. Before he moved to New York, he came back and opened Atomic Comics. And so when I got... I'm throwing out names again. I shouldn't be throwing out names.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
All right. But when me and my buddy got our license, we went in. It's like, oh, my God, you're the guy that owned the comic shop that was on 24th Street. And he goes, yeah, Kenny. And remembered who I was. It was really kind of magical. And I'm going, that's really cool. And so, you know, it's like that. They made that part of my rotation to go see Mike over at Atomic Comics. And, you know, it's like, hey, dude, you know, I tried even selling him advertising when I was working with Channel 15. He goes, you don't have any programs that work with my business. And I go, dude. You know, Kevin Sorbo's Highlander, is that what it was called? What was Kevin Sorbo's show?
Hercules.
Legendary
Journey.
Wasn't there another one he did too, though?
Andromeda.
Renegade?
And Renegade.
Was that it?
Renegade
okay.
was the bike one, where is that?
That was
the
Channel 15 had no sci-fi.
No, because there were two Renegades, weren't there?
I thought Renegade was Lorenzo Lamas.
He did it.
So, yeah, he was on it, but Lorenzo Lamas was the main guy.
Kevin Sorbo was in it too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, our Andromeda.
Andromeda.
That's it.
Andromeda.
Thank you, dude. It was Andromeda.
That was the one, yeah. He was the figurehead in that one?
It was the closest thing demographic to Atomic I could think about pitching to him. And plus, as working at Channel 15, he got me an excuse to go to a comic shop. And Atomic Comics had the chain, so it was like, hey, that's a good prospect. And so I had to sell my prospects to my sales manager. And I go, hey, do you know what? Because he was more or less in the fact of, like, show me the money. And I'm like, that dude, show you the results, and the money will come naturally. And so we had a little bit of business philosophies, too, that kind
of. Naturally. Podcast.
I'm sorry. I'm so soon. And it's like that. It was to the point, like, where by the time February hit, of being at Channel 15, I passed the right light where I had to leave because of advertisers pulling out pretty much what happened. Then I went to the shoes, and then, you know, I went to work for Atomic Comics for 6 months. Unfortunately, it was not a good mesh because they had their philosophies, and unfortunately, things were getting a little bit off of where the owner wanted to be, and he wanted me to help him get it back on track. And I was unfortunately looked at as the one against the 21 and could go to pretty much Paul Heyman terms. You know, yeah. I was not the one in 21 in a positive way. I was the one in 21 of the fact that you're not changing the system, dude. You know, it's like that. I don't care how much you know about comics. I don't know how much you know about customer service. We are Atomic Comics, and we're successful because we're Atomic Comics, not because of you. And so me and the owner that I've known forever, and I go, dude, what are we going to do about this? And he goes, you can, you know, I totally understand, dude. It's like either you back me, but I'm one person and you have the machine. And so you just have to decide to keep me around or we part ways. And, you know, we parted ways and I went to work for Macy's for 2.5 years selling shoes again because I didn't have a job for about 2 weeks and I hate not having a job. That's like the worst feeling in the world is not having a job. And my buddy was selling luggage over there and he goes, hey, dude, the shoe manager needs someone. I know you did shoes in the past. I go, let me go. And got the job real easily because I had tons of shoe experience and worked my ass off selling lady shoes for 2.5 years. And a recruiter came over from High Health. And I'm kind of going, I'm not in shape. You know, she goes, it doesn't matter what you look like. It's just you have really special customer service skills. And we want you to come in for an interview. And if you don't like it, you don't have to do anything different. But we just call this person and go in for an interview. And sure enough, I got a job. They wanted me to manage a High Health store, but they didn't have an open location. So I was floating between Fountain Hills, Scottsdale, and 19th Avenue and Northern. When that High Health was there, it's over by Bookman's. It's closed down, I noticed now. But that was going to be my permanent store, but the manager didn't leave yet. He was still within his 2 weeks. And so I was floating around, and then it's like that. I was doing research on opening my whole store the whole time, and I was looking around for rent spots and going, I can't afford rent right now. Then when I did the interview with High Health, I said, I'm looking to open my own business. And she goes, like, is that going to happen soon? I go, I don't see it happening with the next year. And sure enough, Phoenix Comic Con was over here in Glendale. We went to it, and Susan was walking around. She goes, rent down here is extremely affordable. I can't believe we can get this little place over here for. I'm going to say the number. I'm not supposed to talk numbers, but $500 a month. And I go, that's a no-brainer. Let's just take a look at it. And it was a small little 500-square-foot hole that, you know, more or less we used to be the worst comic shop in town, according to some people. But that's just, it was heart, stock, knowing what we're talking about. And 2 years later, we were over by Subway.
Yep.
And yeah, that was like, we want to be closer to the park because that's where all the action is. The park is absolutely amazing down here. They do all kinds of events, and it's like, we know what we're talking about. We believe in what we're doing, and the steps just started to get to where we were open. We were open 2 years. We grew out of that little 500-square-foot space. We need more room. My wife's support for some goofball that loves comic books to keep with me on it, which is, you know, it's half her business as much as it's half my business, but it's 100% drawn to comics, which is the customer's business we always try to reflect on. And then after being there from 2007 to 2011, we were grown out of there. And it's like that, dude, what are we going to do with all the stock? And the one problem with running a comic shop is stock never stops coming in. I mean, we've been open 10 years. We probably have close to 100,000 comics that were not mine before I opened the store. I opened the store with about 12,000 comics, and now we probably have close to 112,000 comics, and it's a problem. I admit that's that's one of the stink eyes of owning a comic shop is stock management. And so now that's our next goal, is like, what's our next thing? We rented out the space behind us for the Christmas season, and me and Susan talked again. It's like that, it's money, but we got to do something to start making room again. And we've been successful so far, so as long as we keep on doing what we're doing and we're being honest about it, we'll make it work.
Keep on keeping on.
So that's 2015 now. It's going to be our 10th anniversary this year in May. Remember, opened up May 2005, setting up the room, free comic day, kids in the neighborhood. I didn't have any product in there yet. I just had my glass display cases while we're painting the wall. I ordered some free comics from Diamond because that's one of the few things I could order from Diamond. You don't usually get your books until 2 months after you open.
Yeah.
And I was just handing out free comics saying, hey, there's going to be a comic shop here. I'm going to do my best to get new comics for you, but I have my back issues that will be in here. I have toys that I've collected. And, you know, I started off with a small amount to pay off some debts, so we didn't have as much debt, and put the rest of it into opening the comic shop. But instead of buying a motorhome or building a pool, when the housing market exploded, we took that money out, equity, and opened the business. And so I said, too, it's not the most traditional way of doing business, but if you have a love and a passion, you find ways to make things work. I don't recommend doing it that way, that for everybody, but that's how we got started. And we're not debt free. You may never be debt free opening a comic shop, but if you do what you love and you are a good negotiator with things, you find ways to make things work.
Yeah. Works out pretty well.
Cool. Yeah. So that's more or less how Drawn to Comics got started and where we are today.
The secret origin story.
Exactly. Yeah. That was your red and blue spider suit story.
Yes.
Now you're in your black and white suit.
Nice.
Until
hopefully
it tries
the fans
to take
will
over.
Like the black and white suit and not want to get rid of it so quickly. Because so I can't far. Believe Marvel, dude, they were so ready to make that Spider-Man for long term. Yeah. The backlash on it was horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, they had letterhead. If you look at any of the history on that, that was not temporary. And the fans are more or less, oh my god, you took candy from me as a baby. You can't do that to me. That's not my Spider-Man. Yeah, and it's just like Marvel was committed to it, but they unfortunately, the backlash was just too strong for them.
Yeah, death threats and everything.
Yeah.
Craziness. All right, so that was the origin story of Ken and Drawn to Comics. So
hope
welcome.
You guys
with
enjoyed
a little
the
bit
time
of the origin story from Mike.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I don't know if they're connected, but keep on reading to find out.
Yeah, we're going to have a crossover in a few issues.
All right, so we'll go into our first little exercise here. This will be pretty short. This will be favorite non-superhero comic. You can whatever you want to do, it'd be crazy. So we'll start with Ken, our special guest. So what's your, it doesn't have to be all time, but what's one of your favorite non-superhero comic books?
Man, that was so hard for me to think about this week, because I admit, I grew up a superhero fan. There was no two points about it. I was the guy that, I was at a comic shop back in 2002, if I remember correctly, 2002, 2003, when Walking Dead was pitched to me when it first came out. And I'm going, this guy said, dude, this book is freaking awesome. I mean, it's Robert Kirkman, a guy that's, you know, kind of new on the scene. He's done a few things. It's a zombie story. Do you like horror movies and zombie movies, stuff like that? You go, okay, I'm not too much into him, man. He goes, just trust me. You don't want to miss out on this, dude. Tony Moore is a really cool artist. They're indie guys, but it's going to be a hot book. And I'm kind of going, all right, let me take a look at it. He tried selling me hard enough. I'll take a look at it. I opened up. It was black and white. And I go, I was the kid in 1984 that turned down Trading for Turtles number one because it was in black and white.
And you I just wanted was, that color.
That's yeah. what, like, we were well, that era. 1980s was color TV. Badass. Knight Rider. A-Team. Explosions. Coolness. Miami Vice. Dude, it was all about how vivid everything looked.
Yeah.
Black and white comic didn't do shit for me. Excuse my French. And so 1984 was turning down Turtles. 2003 was turning down Walking Dead number one. And it's that, ironically, is now the most consistent book I read every month. And I said, too, that's not a Marvel or a DC book. I mean, Batman religiously I read, DC, Marvel, Amazing Spider-Man I religiously just read. And it's just Spider-Man, if there was an Alpha Flight book that was still coming out, I'd probably, if it sucked, I wouldn't be reading it. But if it was good, I can guarantee you I'd be reading it. But Walking Dead, ironically, the fact that I turned it down, the person that got me into reading it was Susan, because Susan hates horror movies. She will not watch anything bloody and gory with me, because it's just doesn't like it. But she started reading Walking Dead. I'm going, you're reading Walking Dead, honey? It's like my wife, Susan. And I go, you hate this kind of stuff. She goes, yeah, but it's not about the blood and the gore. It's about the people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really freaking awesome. And I spot read it, but I never read it from the start. And so I kind of like casually went into it. Well, for Valentine's Day one year, I bought her the first compendium. And she read through it again within like two nights. I go, effing A, dude, how do you get through this? And I was going like, that you've already read it. And she goes, it's just, it refreshes me on it. It's like, it's a new story every time you read it, because there's so many good characters in it. And it says, okay, I'm going to, you know, finally buy in and get caught up on it. And next thing I know is like that, I'm not a very fast reader, because I like to absorb everything that's going on. That's why I think I like comic books so much, because I fall asleep reading novels. And novels, unfortunately, no disrespect to novel fans, because there's a lot of great literature in there. I don't know literature anywhere near as much as I know comics. And it's just, if it's good story development, I'll keep reading it. And she was exactly right. I'm going, oh my gosh, these characters, the guy that's the best friend's dead by the sixth issue, Shane, I'm sure you guys know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of going, that's a freaking main character gone. So it brought me back to those Alpha Flight days. Like, they killed the freaking leader. What else is going to happen here? And you just got hooked in it. Now it's 137 issues in, and I'm reading them within 10 minutes of getting them, or it used to take me 30 minutes to read a comic book. And it's just obviously mature, and so you don't need to study every little thing as much as you did when you were a kid. Whereas, like, you matured, like, your reading habits change. You can get through stuff quicker. But Walking Dead, I mean, it's such an unfortunate popular answer, but there's a reason why it's a TV show going into its fourth season, or in its fourth season.
Well, in its fourth season, and getting a spinoff.
Yeah. That's right. And a reason, like you mentioned, black and white turning off. Like, it's colors, you know, it's the fact that comics... I'm the first one. If I pick up an issue one off your wall one day and I look at it and the art's not appealing to me, if I'm on the board, I put it back down. I don't pick it up after that. Somebody has to tell me if there's a, because there's some books that I don't like the art, but the writing's so good you have to read it.
Yes.
But somebody's gonna have to talk me into it at some point. Mm-hmm. So I totally get that. But there's a reason a black and white.
Well, part
comic
of Tony Moore
to a TV show
is a pretty artist. Notice where he's like calling him pretty, but like that, he's an amazingly awesome, easy to look at artist. No. Black and white, or color.
Yeah.
And when he's doing Deadpool, it looks cool. When he's doing Walking Dead, it looks cool.
Yep.
If he's doing Rick Remender's Fear Agent, it looks freaking cool. Tony Moore is a good artist. Unfortunately, he left after the sixth issue too, and Charlie Adler was there. That was a drastic thing I had to adjust to reading the compendium, because it was a very different look. But Cliff Rathburn's inks are so freaking good, and he was the guy that was more or less inking with Charlie Adler. And I won't read anything else Charlie Adler, which is pretty sad. But Walking Dead, that book is just one of those rare things, like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That's why they're both worth over $1,000 a piece for an Image number one and a Mirage number one. Name another Mirage number one that's worth more than 20 cents.
Yeah.
No disrespect.
Is there another Mirage number one?
I'm sure they had more titles than just Turtles.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what they are, but that's the thing, though. Of course, Image is a little bit of a different story because, Chew, same thing, but that's a color book. What other black and white book at Image is worth more than $5?
I don't even think there are any other.
Is there anything
Think
Tanks maybe?
You have to be ballsy at this point to even put out a black and white book.
You have to have a good idea. And the thing that Tony Moore and Robert Kirkman did, obviously they were brilliant about taking elements of everything that we knew about horror movies and using that as part of his storytelling. Because if you watch Walking Dead or read Walking Dead, you can catch so many Army of Darkness references, Evil Dead references, things that were done in other movies, but these are the characters that are experiencing in a zombie apocalypse, and it's happening in the same world, everything that we've seen in different movies.
Well, there's
that genius behind it, too, as well.
I love Kirkman, but I don't read or actively read Walking Dead, but Invincible is one of my all-time favorite comics.
Yeah.
And when you talk about, you know, the references to stuff, Invincible, you read the compendium of Invincible, the first 50 issues, and you can almost do like a tally count of all like the pop culture references and movie references and everything that they do. And it's great because it's bringing you into the real world. Like it'll say things. It's kind of like
you can relate to it.
Yeah. You're like, oh, I do that. Like there's, I forget, but it's in the compendium of Invincible. They make jokes about or they reference going on Wednesday to pick up your box at the comic book store, you know? Like, you're not going to see that in a Superman comic or a Batman comic. No. So
that's probably the beauty of the comics medium, though, too. They've been doing that since World War II. They try to relate to people in society. Like, Captain America was not created just to sit there and be a popular superhero. He was created to get the country behind the war.
He's propaganda.
Superman, the same thing too. He was perfect for the fact of that Superman was dealt with the Depression. You know, it's like, oh man, we're in bad economic stats, we're in breadlines, we're Americans, our lives are over, we've hit our peak, we're just going to become like every other third world country because we just don't have it anymore. And then Siegel and Schuster, Superman was, we can overcome anything. You know, there's nothing. I'm an alien from another place, too, just like some of you guys are. It was the melting pot of America that time. And it's just ironic how comics have, ever since superhero inception, have been social commentary for society.
Yeah.
And, like, trying to stay positive during bad times. Just sorry to be interrupted there.
Except for Walking Dead. Because
Walking Dead's not a superhero book, though.
Never
good times. Yep. That's like the exact opposite of superheroes there. That's like the thing. Hey, dude, you know what? We're going to survive because we're human, and there's nothing else we're going to do about it because we're freaking human. We don't need powers, but we have the human spirit. And so it's that type of similar thing, but there's the hope is what more or less comic book fiction, I think, is why it's so popular, is the fact of, like, wow, dude, if these people can get through this, then I can get through what's going on in my life. That's so insignificant. Maybe that's just me, but that's how I kind of reflect a little bit about comic book storytelling.
Yeah.
Michael.
I don't know if this 100% counts as a non-superhero.
Is there a superhero in it?
No.
Okay.
But I'm going to pick American Vampire.
Ooh, good choice.
Because as you know, consistent listeners to the show would know, I'm relatively new to comic books. My friend Cody here got me into it. But it's roughly around the launch of the New 52.
Yes.
Is like just before that is when I read my first trade. And that's right when you moved from across the street to here.
Nice.
Like, I remember I was in your old store once.
You got a great story after you're done about that, which is funny that you said American Vampire.
And then, so I was at your old store once, came in here, and ever since then, that's when I've been into books. So I'm, like I said, relatively new to it. So most of my experience is with superheroes because, you know, big Batman, super, obviously, you know, they're the sexy characters, so to speak. But American Vampire was one of the first non-superhero ones that I read. It was fantastic, and I'm at the point now with if it has Scott Snyder's name on it, I'm gonna read it. So there's no debate or question on that one. It's Snyder wrote it, I'm gonna read it. And then first the first trade had Stephen King too, in a very very a cool format of how it's written with the you know, current story, origin story, you know, back and forth with each issue. It's really good and hooked you, and the art's fantastic too. Again, if I pick up a book and I don't like the art, someone's really gonna have to sell it to me for me to eventually read it. But yeah, American Vampire would be.
Do you know what the comic origin of American Vampire, how it got started?
I do not, no.
Okay, it's pretty cool because I'm a huge Scott Snyder fan too. I'm sure you guys heard me talk about Scott Snyder, not as much as my good friend Jason Perrin, who represented us well for the past 3.5 years, who just went to Korea. So if you guys see Jason Perrin online, the guy knows comics probably just as much as my knowledge, if not maybe a little bit more, especially Superman. But Jason Perrin's a huge Scott Snyder fan too, and I'm a big Scott Snyder fan too, so we kind of clicked on that. And just huge shout out for Jason Perrin. I apologize, that's not the point. But thank you, Jason, for all of your service and interest in our store over the past 3.5 years. We hope to see you again, and good luck in over North Korea and Italy, and hopefully we'll see you in 3 or 4 years back here in Phoenix. But whatever fate that has, Godspeed, sir. But anyway, with Scott Snyder, back to that. When Detective Comics came out, I heard nothing but cool things about it when he was working on Detective Comics. And then I heard about American Vampire, and they said Stephen King was doing the origin for Skinner Suite, and I'm going, Stephen King is doing an origin for a brand new comic writer? How good is this guy gotta be? Do you know what I mean? And ironically, Marvel had a shot at Scott Snyder. They gave him Iron Man Noir.
I tried,
and it was a flop, and so unfortunately they didn't offer him anything else. DC, he pitched a Detective Comics story, he got picked up partially because Stephen King backed his American Vampire idea. Because Stephen King liked the idea so much, he asked to write the origin for Skinner Suite. And Stephen King is no chump. He doesn't need to pimp anybody up.
No.
Do you know what I mean? But he sees talent, and he respects talent, you can say, after saying that.
Do you know how Stephen King got involved with it?
How did that happen? That's something I don't know.
So a couple years ago at San Diego Comic-Con, Joe and I and Joe's brother had a chance to sit through the Vertigo panel,
yes,
which obviously American Vampire.
I know he was a literature teacher in New York.
So what happened was Scott Snyder, they were getting ready to do it, but what Vertigo was trying to do was they were trying to get a lot of their books more mainstream. Mm-hmm. So one of the editors knows Stephen King and said, hey, Stephen King, would you mind doing a foreword for this new horror comic we were doing?
Yeah, that I did not know at all.
So
that's cool.
They sent him the script, and the script was issues 2, 4, and 6, were originally 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
So he loved it so much. Not only did he not, like, he wrote a forward, but then he wrote scripts for in, what
the
ended up being
stories.
Number 1,
yeah,
which is the backup stories, which they moved forward to issues 1, 3, and 5.
Yeah.
And said, I love it so much, this is what I would do. And Scott Snyder's like, yes.
Yeah, it's like, dude, he's having Stephen King give him advice.
Like, yeah, it's like, I didn't.
You don't
like,
turn
that
down.
That down.
I was like, you don't turn down Stephen King's advice, and B, you don't turn down working with Stephen King.
Yeah.
No, especially at that stage of your career.
Yeah, right.
That's what I'm saying. This guy was nobody. Marvel dumped him. You know? I'm saying too, is like that Iron Man Noir story wasn't horrible, just it didn't appeal to Marvel fans.
Yeah.
And it was just, we became instantly drawn to comics, huge Scott Snyder fans, because I'm going, that story was so good. I mean, that American vampire story. I mean, I've always had some fascination with vampires, but I've never read Vampire.
Yeah, and he does it such a good way.
If you come in and
it's so
most
easy to appreciate.
Yeah, most of the stories I read are now stories that have been done for a while, so I could jump in on the graphic novel or you know, volumes of whatever. For me, jumping in on volume one of that was one of the best jumping in points for a continuing series that I've ever read. It was just like, as soon as I read it, I was like, I had to get what else is available right now. And I went out and I got the ones that are available at the time. Was, I think they're at four it just came out. So I was pretty well behind when I started, but it hooked me so much that I went right in and got them all.
And just the history side of it too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a history buff book. Yeah. I mean, the thing too is like, if you love history, that book is absolutely perfect because it's vampires through American history since the Old West is when Skinner Sweet became the vampire.
Yep.
And it was just so brilliantly. I mean, the guy is a college professor. He knows psychology, obviously, too, because he knows what people are interested in. The other guy I think is like almost as good as him is Jason Aaron at doing it.
Yeah,
Jason
yeah.
Aaron studies the crap out of everything that he writes. But I'm sorry to make this, once again, a long story short, a short story long. Scott Snyder... We started more or less a Twitter war between him and Nick Spencer because I asked, who's the best new writer of the year, Nick Spencer or Scott Snyder? And Nick Spencer, that Scott Snyder's a hack. And I'm going, oh, shit, I started a war between
yes. Yes.
And then next thing I know, it's like, the, hey, guys, I didn't know whether they're joking or not because I don't understand Twitter sociology quite at that point yet. And I said, hey, guys, dude, I mean, I didn't want to start any kind of feud between two great writers. You're just my two favorite writers I've read in the past year, and I wanted to hear my fans' opinions about you. And then the next thing I know is I get a phone call from Scott Snyder. He goes, dude, it's all cool. We're really good friends. And
nice.
Like that, it was on our voicemail. I don't want you to be concerned.
Name dropping,
like,
okay.
Somebody else
can do it besides Cody.
I'm sorry, dude. But I couldn't believe that I got this phone call from New York City from Scott Snyder. And I was pissed, first of all, because I missed it. It was on my voice machine, right, my answer machine.
Did you save that?
I did for a long time, and unfortunately got erased, which sucks now. Because I said, how did the message get erased?
Divorce?
She goes, no. I thought you listened to it enough times. I go, no, that's over and over. That's Scott Snyder's voice.
Yeah.
First off, Susan. That's never a thing.
Yeah.
Never a thing.
You have the story, though.
Hey.
That's important.
Hey, do you breathe enough air? No. All right, we're not getting rid of it. What's wrong with you?
Well, here's what's even better, though, is he called me on a Wednesday because he didn't get in touch with me. So the guy called me twice, and he was telling about New 52 spoilers that he couldn't really talk about. And he goes, I'm writing Swamp Thing, and I'm writing Batman. And I go, oh, my God, dude, you're writing Batman? Yeah, because Detective Comics, and he did Gates of Gotham. So he was doing well enough. They gave him Batman with Greg Capullo. And he said, I'm working with Greg Capullo. I'm going, the Spawn Greg Capullo?
Yeah.
And he's going, yeah, Greg Capullo. I mean, that's already been announced, more or less. And I'm going, yeah, it's like, but I'm still in shock that they gave you Greg Capullo. And he goes, you know, Greg loved my pitch.
Well, those,
and, you know, and it's like he wanted to work with me because he was going to either do Spider-Man or Batman. And he picked Batman. And because, I mean, he left Image. I mean, it was more or less the fallout of what happened of how bad Haunt was.
Yep.
Because none of those guys, it was Kirkman, Capullo, Otley, and
McFarlane
inked it. No, Capullo breakdowns.
Yeah.
Otley penciled, and then McFarlane inked, and then Kirkman wrote it. And it was just a nightmare. They didn't get along on the book. And Capullo said, okay, you know what? I need a break from Image, and he went to either do a Marvel book or a DC book, and he picked Batman based off of Scott Snyder's script.
And what's funny about that, too, is early on, this is pretty well documented, too, so a lot of you might know it, but they butted heads right at first because Capullo wants, you know, obviously the artist he is, he wants a little bit of free range. He's pretty good at taking general...
That's right.
Otley
said, dude, I don't need people laying out stuff for me.
Yeah, and that's how Scott Snyder wrote, was detailed everything. Yeah. And when there's stories where Greg Capullo got it, said, what the fuck am I going to do with this?
You know, well, that Maze issue, number 5 of Batman, dude, I was confused by that book because I was reading it twice. And I reread these pages. And it was one of the most brilliant things that ever happened in comic history. So they were both brilliant people working at the right time with each other.
And it's funny now, too, because if you're on social media
like
and you
Scott
follow
Snyder's
him.
Or enjoy the Scott.
Yeah, he's a good guy. But if you follow them both on any time, like Twitter or something, it's funny because they're always going back and forth and they're legitimately like really good friends now.
Yeah.
So it's funny hearing that story, but all the amazing work that they've done since then. Like, because a lot of people suspected it was going to be a one story arc deal. And now it's been...
It's 50 issues, I think, they'll be finally done. Or this is the last one with Endgame.
Last one.
So it's be like 40-something it'll be done then?
That's 48, a long stretch for one creator on a...
That's epic. Yeah, the one thing that's done better than that has been Bendis on Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah, and he's... I guess
Kirkman and Adlard on Walking Dead, but a mainstream book.
Yeah.
For one like Batman? Yeah, that's ridiculous. Yeah, like that's not going to happen again for a while, unless they put him back on it, you know, in a couple years.
So the third part, I apologize, going back to that Scott Snyder story. We got a letter from Scott Snyder. He gave us two American Vampire sign posters.
It was
freaking insane. I'm going, are you freaking kidding me? And it pissed me off because it was right before we moved. That's why I brought up this idea in my head. I can't find where I put it since I moved.
Oh.
And I gave the other one to my buddy that's from Canada. You know, have you met John Degg? He's helped me out here. He's the guy that's got... It's some form of epilepsy. I can't remember what the term is.
Last summer, I think it was.
But we were pimping the shit out of Scott Snyder because how much we loved his work. I said, dude, this was more or less before Jason was helping out regularly with us. And I said, John, dude, you get the other poster, man. And so John's got the other Scott Snyder American Vampire story. So if you guys need to validate that, look at John Degg. And it's not bullshit. This is a real story.
Yeah.
All right, Joe, what's your favorite non-superhero comic book?
Non-hero comic. It's so freaking hard. I almost want to just say anything written by Brian K. Vaughan.
Easy out.
But you would assume my easy out would be Saga.
I would assume
it's not going
to be. Yeah.
It's going to be Why the Last Man because it's going to be one or the other.
Like there's.
I love Saga because of the science fiction behind it because of it's such a different but like big story, but it's actually about this little family. So it's weird to actually love a comic book that literally is just about this family on the run. You know, I would never think at any time point in my life I would actually like a comic like that. But it's actually Why the Last Man that I really got into that type of stories because I was, when I was younger, I did read comics, but not, I didn't really collect them or anything, but it was mostly Batman. You know, that was always my favorite character. Even when we came back just before the New 52, it was Batman. You know, I have to read the new Batman stuff. I have to look at all this stuff. But then Cody introduced me to Why the Last Man. And at first, the concept of it was, all the men in the world die with the exception of one and then his helper monkey Ampersand. And it's like, that doesn't really sound like something that could be...
That already sold me.
Interesting.
Monkey? I'm in.
Yeah.
You could make a comic just about him.
Batman's
I'm going to read it.
Robin.
Yeah.
It's Ampersand, right? Yeah. Do you remember his name?
Yep, Ampersand.
Ampersand.
Ampersand, yeah. What is an Ampersand, anyway?
It's a little thing that when you look at a...
something with a...
It's a little star thing on the phone.
Oh, okay.
Star. Yeah. It's
Ampersand.
Ampersand?
Okay,
yep.
Cool.
I called it
the pulse button when I was a kid.
I started reading that, and I just thoroughly enjoyed it. And it was just mostly because the writing was just so fluid and the storytelling was just so amazing.
Nice.
You know, and it flowed so well. And the artwork, I don't remember who did the artwork for Why the Last Man, but it was...
Is that right?
Pia Guerrera.
You know, it's simplistic, but it's just, awesome in the way it just brings out the realness of the book itself, So that'd be my pick.
It's awesome pick.
Yeah. Cody?
Ken actually kind of talked about mine. Fear Agent is mine. If you've never read it, Rick Remender, it's phenomenal. It's the most ridiculous space story you'll ever read in your life. The worst and the best things that could ever happen to a human, like a one person, happens to this guy. His family gets murdered by vicious aliens in front of him. He gets lost in time and ends up causing what actually killed his family.
Nice.
And when he was trying to stop it and making the universe way worse, he has died several times and brought back by clone bodies or by being in an alien's body. It's ridiculous. It's the most absurd super science fiction story ever, and it's fantastic because he's a drunk. And he's a huge asshole. Like, he's the guy, in a movie or a book, you saw this guy, you'd be like, fuck that guy, I want him to die.
Yeah.
But in this one, he's your hero.
He's a Stifler.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it's ridiculous, but it's fantastic. It's one of the best science fiction stories I've ever read. It's fantastic. Everyone should read it right now. Stop listening and go
read. I'll
be
right back.
Yeah. Ken's like, and pause. So that was mine. So we'll make this quick because we have a lot of the answers, but we're going to go to our wrestling guy for most of it. So this is the game we talked about last week, guys. If you remember, if you're listening to the first time, you're going to be super confused. But what it is, it's called WWE Presents the Tim Burton, Joel Schumacher Batman. So we went through the main cast of all the Batman.
It is exactly what it sounds like.
Yep.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's what we do here.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we went through, picked up all the main characters from Batman all the way through Batman and Robin, and we are going to take present and past wrestlers, professional wrestlers from the WWE, WWF, WCW, all those, and we're going to put them in those roles. So main one, one of the things we did is we split up Bruce Wayne and Batman, so they will be played by two different people.
Yeah.
Same thing with Robin and Dick Grayson.
Okay, wow.
Just because. We'll tell you why, because this guy over here nailed Bruce Wayne.
It's not literally.
The smartest thing.
Literally nailed Bruce Wayne.
The smartest thing Joe's ever said in his entire life.
Is it the Val Kilmer or the George Clooney one, though?
We're talking, this is Batman. Like Batman from Tim Burton's all the way through. This is going to be Bruce Wayne. So the Bruce Wayne
the
we chose.
Perfect of all time, then?
Of those four movies.
Tim Burton's and Joel Schumacher ones?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Go.
The Million Dollar Man.
Ted DiBiase.
Money. Yeah.
Ted DiBiase is our Bruce Wayne.
Which is brilliant. I had to give that to him because his initial ideal is we're going to have Bruce Wayne played by Ted DiBiase and someone else.
I just want the Million Dollar Man to be Bruce Wayne. We can get somebody else to do better.
Whoever you want.
Can I nominate one other person or no? Oh, sorry.
No, we can throw up whoever you want.
What about JBL?
That would have worked. These guys don't watch wrestling.
Okay. No.
So me and you are going to be very
on the same wavelength with this one.
And Alberto Del Rio I could see too, but he would be the Hispanic Bruce Wayne.
So that'd be the... that's the Zorro dude. What's his name? El Cacaron, right? His name is no El Cacaron. In the Grant Morrison runs, there's the Mexican Batman's name?
Oh, I forgot his name right now.
It was him, because he was only
like one or two issues.
Yeah, it's basically Zorro, but yeah. It could be him.
Yeah,
for sure.
Alberto Del Rio for him. But instant casting after he pulled out that wonderful idea. Cody's light bulb went off and said, well, that makes it easy to cast Alfred. It would be Virgil. So
that is a good point.
Makes way too much sense.
JBL didn't have an assistant. Really. Yeah. He had the limousine driver.
Boom.
He saw.
Yeah. You get dropped. Yeah. Ted DiBiase takes over and Virgil goes into the Alfred role.
Yeah.
Bam.
Ricardo Rodriguez would have to be the Alfred.
Oh, for Del Rio. Yeah, that'd be pretty good. So who would you want as actual Batman, because we talked about it, but
I said The Undertaker just because he can do that, like, you know, he's so fucking serious about
brooding,
shit. And then anytime he shows up, you have like that, you know, what was his theme song? Wasn't it like Hell's Bells playing in the background?
Sometimes, yeah. Yeah,
Batman just shows up and it's just all doom.
Yeah, the gong doom. Goes off, lights go out, and everyone knows Batman's coming.
Like, oh, we're in trouble now, kids. You guys hear that, right? That's the AC/DC in the background. All right, so Undertaker. Dude. Everyone good with Undertaker versus Batman? You have a different one, Ken?
Let me think, because I was like really thinking hard for like that too, because I think Undertaker, to me, is more or less like your Solomon Grundy in the DC universe.
Which could be, yeah.
I mean, it's like that's just me going off on a reach. I know that's not Batman, so I picture Undertaker as like a Solomon Grundy in my head.
Him or Kane?
Yeah, him or Kane for sure.
Actually, and I think Kane would be a good one for that.
For Batman, it sounds kind of crazy saying it for me, but. I look more at like a Triple H personality. Do you mean like the cerebral assassin? Because he always outthinks everybody, and like that
he's going next level.
Was the one thing? Was the one thing like that? He can be a successful businessman, but he could be outthink every single other wrestler and get over on him. Another one maybe be Randy Orton, but Randy Orton's not that smart. Do you know what I mean? In my opinion, no disrespect. I mean he's a smart guy in real life. But the way they make his characters is he's more or less the pawn. He's not the leader.
Yeah.
And Bruce Wayne's a leader of the Justice League in a way. Do you know what I mean? Superman defers to Batman when it comes to ideas. Shawn Michaels deferred to Triple H. Not calling Shawn Michaels Superman in any way. But Triple H and Shawn Michaels were like Batman and Robin. Do you know what I mean? In my opinion, in a way, like Shawn Michaels was funny, entertainingly stupid, but he could get the job done. Just like Burt Ward, Robin was funny, entertainingly stupid, but he had
Batman.
Do you know what I mean? And Shawn Michaels,
that's outside interference.
Shawn Michaels doing stuff like that.
Wham!
So I kind of see like my
Paul Dini loves that version.
Exactly, dude. But that's the only argument I would have is maybe Triple H is like a Batman type.
That's solid.
Character.
Triple H?
That's rock solid. Because we didn't have Triple H for anything else. Yeah. That's pretty good.
That'd be fun.
All right, so next up was Commissioner Gordon. Before we started recording, we thought Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, simply because Hulk Hogan has a mustache.
He has a mustache.
And Hulk Hogan has to get put in there somewhere, and we couldn't think of anything else. So
let me see. Commissioner Gordon, can I take a stab at that
one? Yeah, take a stab, man. It's free reign.
Commissioner Gordon sees Jack Tunney.
Who is that?
See, I feel bad because me and Ken are understanding this, but you guys are like, what?
Okay, you guys could. Yeah, let me lock up real quick.
No, good. We'll keep talking.
So?
Business.
So explain to Mike who this is we're talking about.
Jack Tunney was like, for the longest time, was like the president of the – before – everyone knew that Vince McMahon was like the owner because Vince McMahon was just going commentating. Jack Tunney was the one that was like making the decisions and making the rulings. So yeah, it makes sense. He's kind of would be that.
You know, also could be.
I think Ken's taking this like whole next level.
You know, else could be Commissioner Gordon about it. Mean Gene.
Mean Gene Okerlund could is the authoritative figure, and everyone respects him.
It's true.
Even the bad guys.
I could be good with Mean Gene.
Mean Gene is just like the coolest.
He's not a wrestler either. Like, I mean,
he's
Commissioner
in the biz.
But I mean, like, Commissioner Gordon isn't like, you know,
a hero
or a villain or anything like that.
Unless you read Black Mirror.
Yeah.
I'm just going deep on that one. But just thinking with mustaches and people who seem of authority.
Yeah, we. Ken's a lot more thoughtful than we are. We're not.
We're not deep in the wrestling tights, if you know what I mean.
But yeah, so Tunney would make sense, but for the sake of having a guy with a mustache, we have to have Hulk Hogan there.
It's gonna be ridiculous no matter
what. We're trying to make it weird.
We have Ted DiBiase as Bruce Wayne.
We're trying to go over the top here. So who would the next character be?
Joker.
I still can't think of anything. Sting.
You need
I put out Sting earlier just
simply because of the face paint.
Face paint. I mean, yeah. It really honestly was.
Do you need someone who's outlandish and crazy though? Like, there's that like flip of the switch, and you never know when it's gonna come in. Like, that's the thing. As I was trying to think of someone who is that way, like, who would be good at that?
I think CM Punk take a crack at that, even though he's a UFC fighter.
Now.
You know,
I would say CM Punk could pull it off. I'm also going to throw out a name, Dean Ambrose, that I know you guys don't know, Ken would know, but it'd be either CM Punk or Dean Ambrose. But I like CM Punk, name value. Big recognition.
Thank you.
Thanks, man.
So now that you're back, we decided Hulk Hogan as Commissioner Gordon.
Because we're being ridiculous. Yeah. So we're trying to be as ridiculous as possible here. So we got on to Joker.
Okay. Joker's
going to
be fun.
And I threw out one, you could have CM Punk do it.
Yeah.
Or Dean Ambrose.
Dean Ambrose reminds me so much of Deadpool, it's absurd.
Yeah.
That actually would work then, if it's like that. Yeah.
I know it's not Batman, but that's.
But no, but I mean,
you guys are going to have to watch a YouTube clip of one of his interviews, just any of his interviews.
He's
and you'll
awesome.
See
I'll He's totally get around
the
to that.
The Riddler, yeah. I was thinking, would be more of CM Punk because of the alliteration and the way he talks. CM Punk's I'm not going to say educated or worldly, but he's very wordy and he likes the big words and stuff like that. You know,
he did have that podcast. Yeah. Is it still going?
Or no, it was just a YouTube video he did for Nerdist.
Okay,
Grammar Smackdown. He could do both, man.
Joker was such a hard thing for me to think about because Joker's so freaking unique.
Yeah,
and he's so
off
the beaten path.
Because we're looking at the Tim Burton Joker.
Oh yeah,
think of that Joker. Don't think of the vast.
The
DC
Tim Burton Joker.
One, but think
so not the Cesar Romero Joker Heath Ledger Joker.
No, we think of
that's
Tim
right.
Burton's,
we're still doing the Schumacher Burton ones.
Yeah.
My bad.
So Tim Burton's Joker.
Okay. So the Jack Nicholson Joker.
Jack Nicholson Joker. Who
I would
do
say
think
Paul Heyman.
Paul Heyman?
I like Paul Heyman. Yeah.
Paul
Heyman
going
is.
Down.
Does that sound good?
That was good, yeah.
Sure.
Because the man can't outthink anybody. He's a super intellectual, crazy man. You know what I mean? He always backs the right people to help him get his goals done. Like, you know, the Joker knows how to use anybody to his advantage. You saw him just pretty much manipulate the Justice League to attack Batman. Obviously, it was with chemicals where...
Such a wrestling
Paul Heyman's Paul Heyman's weapon is his mind to get more or less anybody to be better than who they are and make them succeed at his goals, not their goals. Brock Lesnar, CM Punk, Antonio Cesaro, so many people that have been in, even Curtis Axel. You know, Curtis Axel was at his best when he was with Paul Heyman. Curtis Axel got to be the replacement for Justin Gabriel at the Royal Rumble because Justin Gabriel wouldn't job for Eric Rowan. He goes, I'm getting in this ring, I'm going to wrestle. That's what I truly believe happened, why Justin Gabriel quit the night before Royal Rumble. Mm-hmm. It's because they were going to take his spot with the gimmick thing that happened on SmackDown earlier this week with Eric Rowan getting his job back, but not everyone's going to have a happy ending. He's not going to be in the Royal Rumble. So what do? He goes in there and eliminates Luke Harper, the guy that eliminated him from being in the Royal Rumble, too. So storyline-wise, I think that's why Justin Gabriel quit, if you guys know anything about WWE, what's going on in the past week in the Royal Rumble and stuff
this
like that.
This guy does.
That guy does.
Just theory. What do you think about
that? Educated me.
You've sold me on...
Sounds right.
Yeah.
Next. So that automatically moves Punk over to Riddler.
Oh, yeah. So
that's done.
We got
I have no problem with that because that guy can out-riddle anybody.
He's a talker.
This was one of the ones we had a problem with. Bob the Goon. Now, if you don't remember...
the Joker's from the one?
Yeah, so Joker's henchman from the first Tim Burton movie. Mm-hmm. He's very crucial.
Okay.
Mainly because he is the right hand of the Joker.
Is that Brock Lesnar then?
No, we already got Brock Lesnar. We'll wait to give you that one.
That's
later.
A lock.
Yeah.
So that's going to be Bane, you guys, probably? No.
Trust me.
Bane would make more sense, but we...
Don't worry. Hold on. We got you. Story. Yeah. Don't worry, Ken. We'll feed you that little nugget of awesomeness.
Nice. Sorry.
But we're trying to think of someone who is not the ultra villain, but not just a guy you can be thrown away. It's got to be... It's Bob the Goon, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have a guy... And he's a little bit too much of a talker, but just his physical look, I like it. I'd say the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart.
See, Bob Goon was that, he was that talkative Bob the Goon, you think?
No,
Bob
he
wasn't.
Goon was pretty quiet. He had one line.
But Jimmy Hart is small, tiny, and he could be a sidekick. We're making a wrestling version of Batman, sure. So why wouldn't Bob the Goon
have
a megaphone?
Daniel Bryan then?
No, Daniel Bryan's too good to be.
Who did I suggest earlier? I'm trying to remember.
I can't remember.
Yeah. Oh, Santino Morella would be Bob the Goon.
Hey, he feels goofy, though.
Okay.
I don't like Morella either.
No, yeah.
It's like called bias, and we have it.
We're
not above bias.
We're no short.
So I'm trying to remember like Bob the Goon's personality because Bob the Goon's like
he's real chilled. He's just a loyal.
Doesn't have a line until the very end.
You actually hit earlier. Ricardo
Rodriguez.
Yeah, he'd probably be pretty
Bob
good.
Ricardo Rodriguez.
He's a sidekick. He's Alberto Del Rio's sidekick. He's basically his ring announcer.
So what about like Chavo Guerrero?
I haven't thought about Chavo in a long time. Chavo would be pretty good too.
Because he was Eddie Guerrero's chill partner, dude. I mean, like that. He whatever Eddie needed, he would do for him. But he wasn't loud about it. He just respected, you know. I love their love cheat or lying, cheating, and stealing.
Yeah,
things they would do were such fun gimmicks. But I don't know if that's a good reference or not for Bob the Goon or not, though.
That'd be pretty good. That'd be pretty solid.
Okay.
I'll take it.
These guys
We'll defer that to you guys. Cause,
I'm sorry, dude. Yeah. It's like that.
So what do we have Bob the Goon do?
Unfortunately, studied wrestling and watched comics over the years.
Chavo Guerrero.
Eddie's
nephew. For these guys, but they don't know who he is. But that makes sense.
Is that too much reach for us?
No. That's good.
I don't know how to spell it, but we'll skip over it.
Just like Chavo.
Vicky Vale.
Ooh. That's a fun one. There's tons that could do that.
I say Stacey Keibler.
Stacey Keibler for Vicky Vale?
Yeah. Because she doesn't really do anything.
Yeah.
She has Keibler. To be ditzy, but not too ditzy.
Stacey Keibler is smoking hot, though, too. Yeah. So.
Well, we're looking at smoking hot, too.
Boom. Done. I say book it, dude.
I want to think this through really hard, though, too. I'm sorry, dude. I'm going like a little bit over the top here trying to think. If someone kids the Divas division is pretty awesome right now.
Yeah.
What's it, Stacey? What?
Keibler.
Keibler.
Like the elf.
What about Tori Wilson?
Isn't that the next door neighbor from Full House?
No, that's Kimmy Gibbler.
Oh my bad, sorry.
Add a couple of blurs.
She grew up to be a wrestler? That's crazy.
What about Tori Wilson?
I'm strictly picking Keebler.
She looks like Vicki Vale.
Cause she actually does kind of look like Vicki Vale.
That's a good point. Kim Basinger, Stacey Keebler, I could see that. Said, her legs just never stop. I'll give you that.
That was her theme song. Your legs are awesome too. ZZ Top.
Was it legs? Yeah. Nice.
That was pretty dope.
Nice. Yeah, who's next on the list?
Oh, well, so.
Yeah.
Next we have Penguin, which we actually already cast.
Who'd you cast as Penguin?
Paul Bearer.
That's a tough one to argue, dude. That's a really tough one to argue.
Well, that's a good one. Yeah.
Man, let me see.
That's rock solid right there.
It's pretty good.
The Penguin. Yeah, I can't think of anybody better than Paul Bearer to be the Penguin either. That's pretty awesome.
It's a good one. That's one of those surefire ones. Yeah. Can't argue that one.
About Bobby Heenan.
Nah.
Okay, too tall.
Heenan's too much fun though.
When you look at Paul Bearer, he's so creepy and like waddly already. That it almost like if you just gave him a bow tie, you'd be like
and an umbrella.
And like made him eat fish.
You take
raw,
his urn, give him an umbrella
and be like
and tell him do your Danny DeVito. And
no, just tell him, be you.
Fish.
Exactly. Exactly. We just got a Paul Bearer impression on the show. First ever. LES. Next would be Catwoman. We did not have one picked out because it's female wrestlers and we all suck at that. So.
I would say Paige would be a good Catwoman.
Take it.
Paige it is. All right. All
does
right.
That sound
easy?
Good yeah. For Paige, yeah. Catwoman?
Because I was thinking either Paige or AJ Lee.
But AJ Lee, too. That's another one. I'd see her as Harley
that's
Quinn.
That's CM Punk's old lady, by the way.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
They're actually married?
Yeah.
Not like show married, but
real
like
life.
Married.
She loves comics, so if you get her on the show, that would be freaking epic.
I'd love to yeah. I would love to see CM Punk on the show. Yeah. So if you could hook that
dude,
up.
Dude, hook like, but that's saying AJ Lee's the way to CM Punk.
I will do backdoor through AJ Lee. I don't care. I'll go.
Because well, now she's not coming on the podcast. On NXT, she just said backdoor through AJ Lee.
It comes naturally, all right?
When she was on the NXT when she first debuted, she talked about how much of a geek she was and how much she loved comics.
Oh. You know?
And so that's before even like CM Punk even knew her.
We're always open to new guests.
We're always open. So if you want
to, I don't know how
to
get. Well, Jason supposedly met her at a bar one time.
Well, there you
go. He bought her dinner.
The smallest string of getting someone like that on, we'll take it.
Yeah. Dude, that would be insane.
We will go meet them to record.
I will fly somewhere, and it's LA. I think is where he lives now, right?
Because I know he's doing UFC training right now.
Where is he? I thought he was doing MMA. No, he's not training in New Mexico. That's Greg Jackson's camp. I don't know where he's training.
Yeah, whatever. We'll find out. We'll go there. We'll do interview with her and then be like, yo, CM, come on.
Come on.
Come on.
Dude, let's your wife's talking to you, man. Oh, Punk. CM Punk.
Yep. That's how you got the name.
Excuse me, Mr. Punk.
Mr. Chicago Made, or are you Chick Magnet? What is the CM, sir? Like, we just want to find out, like, why do you like Valiant so much, man? Valiant Comics, you're Twitter about Valiant Comics before they're even out. Who does that, CM Punk? I'm calling you out.
Hey.
Bring it on.
If you get them early, you can get whatever you want.
Sweetie, kick my ass so fast, it'd be fun. Go to sleep. Dude, I'm not going to stop talking, CM. You got to put me in that finisher. That would be epic. I got Go to Sleep by CM Punk, and I'll brag about it.
Yeah.
Who doesn't?
And won't stop, ever. Let's see. Next
that's
was
my humor coming through.
Max Schreck. If you don't remember Max Schreck, Batman Returns, it was played by Christopher Walken. He's the guy who threw Catwoman out the window.
We got that one locked down.
Yeah. Who's that going to be?
We have that locked down. That is Vince McMahon.
Do you think that'd be Vince doing that?
Yeah,
for sure.
Wow.
There's no argument with that one. We can't.
So Vince, though, like more or less, you're fired and throw you out the window.
Yeah.
Yep.
I guess I could see that to a point.
Yep. So he's tossing Paige out the window.
What about Shawn Michaels? What did Marty Jannetty in that aspect?
Yeah, but he wasn't like a boss.
That's
at that
true.
Time.
He didn't know her well.
He was just a tag.
That's true.
That
was more or less
like,
hey, dude,
point.
You're my employee. You're done. I'm killing
exactly.
you.
Yeah.
Because if he could, I guarantee you Vince McMahon would definitely throw someone out a window.
Yeah.
He probably has.
Yeah. We just don't know about it.
Yeah. He's like, he probably sets up windows just to throw people out of them. Yep.
Then we have our Two-Face we picked out already, which is Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Yeah.
As long as we're going to paint half his body black like he did in WrestleMania 6.
Who's like a wrestler that really can go face and heel better than anybody?
Piper.
The Piper you think is
Piper
probably the best
at it? Piper was the greatest heel. Back in the day.
But was he the greatest face, though, too?
No, but he was a great face. It wasn't the greatest face, but he was a great face.
Plus, we want ridiculous.
Yeah, and at WrestleMania 6, he came out half painted black. If that's not a or inner earning to play Two-Face in a made up movie by a podcast. I don't know what is.
I'm just like being debater.
Banter.
Ken is the master debater.
Yeah, dude. I tried to fix that when I was 12, and luckily I never got started. But either way, you guys figured out.
You do wear glasses, so yeah. the rumors are true.
And has hairy palms. So, we got that one. So CM Punk is our Riddler.
Riddler.
So that brings us to Chase Meridian, Dr. Chase Meridian. That is the love interest from the third movie of it.
Yeah.
Well, watch your head there, buddy.
So talk
I was trying to think about who that would be. That's why my thinking brain there.
Don't do that because that buzzes on the mic.
Oh, does it? My apologies.
Oh, you're fine.
Any wrestler, any female wrestler will work for that one.
I'm just trying to remember. Like,
you
could
do Tori.
Like.
You mentioned Tori Wilson.
Was she blonde?
Ah, who cares?
Was she?
You ever heard of a wig?
She didn't really do anything.
Dr. Chase Meridian. I'm trying to remember what she looked like.
Nicole Kidman.
Yeah. Oh, it's Nicole Kidman.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Okay. What about Natalia? She's too big, though, Natalia.
Natalia's pretty muscular.
Yeah.
He's muscular.
Yeah.
We have Hulk Hogan as Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah, that's true. But he has a mustache, though.
Because, like, Natalia doesn't have a mustache. Natalia's like one of those.
Yes, you know
him. I'll take Natalia. Natalia works.
Because she's kind of more naive, you know, Natalia, of all the divas. Because
I would say Tori Wilson, because she's more or less pointless, and it doesn't really matter about her in the movie.
And Dr. Chase Meridian is fucking useless.
Yeah. that character was an afterthought at best.
There's no point for her in the story. Well,
yeah, wait, and there's really no point love interest? For
her. All right, let's throw her in there. Should have been her thrown out the window. so who we saying who?
Whoever. And that one really doesn't matter at all.
Let's
think of some like this random diva that we just have.
Let's do Tori Wilson.
Tori Wilson.
She had big boobs. Tori Wilson did.
Fair enough.
That's a true story.
Yeah.
That's fact.
Okay.
That's not wrestling fake. That's real.
Real. Are they real? They
That's a shoot, fake. As the wrestlers
out,
say.
What they are may be fake, though.
No, yeah. The boobs are fake. But they're definitely
big.
Have them in real life.
Okay.
Fair enough.
What's next?
Let me clarify.
Dick Grayson. So we can make it be the same person that plays Dick Grayson and Robin.
No.
But
nah,
we're going to go along with the Ted DiBiase thing and make someone play Dick Grayson and someone play Robin.
Joe, I think, knocked this one out of the park already, too. Robin is...
You're welcome. I'm spacing out his name.
Rey Mysterio.
Rey Mysterio.
Oh, Rey Mysterio is Robin. Robin. Yeah.
Makes
Rey
too much sense.
Wow, that'd be Alberto Del Rio and Mysterio would be perfect on that.
Yeah. So who would be...
Like Robin.
Who would be the Dick Grayson to Robin? Because...
Robin Mysterio, you're saying, then, right? So Robin would be Rey Mysterio?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I see that, dude.
Because for some reason, if you wear a mask, you're going to get two actors to play your character.
That's awesome.
Just how it works out.
If you have a secret identity, we will cast two people. That way nobody ever catches on.
Yeah.
So
I don't know.
Well, if it's Rey Mysterio, I mean, he has no hair, and Daniel Bryan's got a ton of hair.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah,
that would be hilarious.
He'd be too different. Yeah.
Rey Mysterio can wear a fucking wig. I don't give shit.
Exactly.
I don't care.
This because
wigs. There's no budget, Ken.
We're dealing with movie magic here.
There's no budget involved. This is WWE money we're saying, dude. We're just printing this out. You know what I mean? No budget. Wigs are not a problem.
Okay, cool. I was saying, like, I don't want to go over budget.
For some reason,
wigs.
Everyone wears skin tight leotards. So Commissioner Gordon has a skin tight leotard.
And rips his shirt. Red and yellow feather boas.
Where's Batman?
Brother.
Where you been, brother? All right, so Dick Grayson, anybody?
It's Gordon Mania across the back.
Gordon Mania. What you gonna do, Batman, when the Riddler comes calling for you?
We're busting wild on the back. Like, it'd be fantastic.
That's fantastic.
I'm trying to think of like a physically like smaller wrestler for this role as well, and that's kind of hard to say.
What about Jamie Noble?
I don't know that one.
Oh, dude, yeah. Put Jeremy Noble.
That would be hilarious, dude.
Yeah, because he's a hillbilly,
from JJ.
Too. So he is. He's got a mean old, like, redneck accent. It is hilarious. That'd be fantastic to see him as Dick Grayson.
I would say Joey Mercury. All right.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
All right, so it comes to our already picked Mr. Freeze.
And there's a long background story on this. We can explain to you off the air, but we already said it on air, so we won't get into it.
Yeah, we'll cut it because it's a long story. But it's Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. It's, so that is we'll explain it to you later.
Yeah, you'll get that.
But
one
it's
afterwards.
Locked. He has yep. to be because there's, of how this
there's
all.
No argument. The reason this is happening is because of that. Yeah. So Brock Lesnar is our Mr. Freeze.
See,
that's why I was figuring Mr. Freeze is the only thing I could think of because Schwarzenegger.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So yeah, basically,
makes,
it is.
Makes too much
so
sense.
Then, Poison Ivy, another girl.
And
so, go.
Cody has a problem coming up with female wrestlers because he's not
know,
an active
I,
fan.
I stopped watching wrestling before in like females 92. Were winning, but like, you know, corner
valets,
winners,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Like they were there to hand you the chair or pull someone's leg off the top rope, whatever yeah. happens to be, right?
Yeah.
Jake the Snake as Poison Ivy.
Come on. I was thinking like someone, I guess, too realistic. I was thinking of Lita because Lita can get back any guy.
No, we're going, I think it's so, Lita makes a lot of sense.
Too much sense, though, obviously. After
too
that.
Much sense. We're going super ridiculous.
Jake
and
the Snake Roberts is awesome.
He is now a man, and his origin story is different, and he doesn't care too much about plants. He just likes snakes. So Jake the Snake. Jake the Snake.
Is Poison Ivy.
Is Poison Ivy. Or.
Well, we'll call him Poison Oak.
We'll come up with the renaming later.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
But Jake the Snake makes
see
too
Rick
much.
Flair.
Woo! I'm Poison Ivy. Woo!
With all his boas that he wears, doing his little dance, strutting. I'm doing the Poison Ivy strut. Right?
That's disgusting. You're weird, Ken.
Sorry. Dude.
So Batgirl,
very diverse.
Yeah,
Batgirl. This is where you can get a real good actual. Female wrestler.
Fights.
And I would say Lita for that.
Lita would be awesome.
Because Lita was an acrobatic. She did like backflips off the top rope and crazy shit. And
what about Naomi?
No. Nah. Lita better. Lita's better.
Lita?
Lita.
Lita? Okay.
Lita. And our last one is Bane.
Burn. So it's got like a horrible voice. That'd be funny.
So Kane comes
Kane.
To mind.
Okay. Yo, let's go there. We because
he didn't really
he
talk
just
much
a
in,
yoked
in the movie,
up
so he didn't you know
freak
he
of an athlete. Yeah. So simply for size mass, I would say Biggie Langston.
Biggie Langston, that would be fun too.
Yeah, because he's
Biggie Langston,
a powerlifting fool.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Could you have like Mark Henry then?
Yeah, but Mark Henry is more just one
tree stump.
Like cylinder shaped monster. At least Big E, you could tell he has like limbs. You can't, Mark Henry.
It's a new day. Yeah.
All right, so that's it for our WWE Presents.
So you're welcome, audience, that yeah. we went through the
Do
trouble
go
of doing
back
that.
Through the list?
Boom.
At all?
So we have Ted DiBiase as Bruce Wayne. We have Triple H as Batman. We have Virgil as Alfred. We have Hulk Hogan as Commissioner Gordon. We have Paul Heyman Robert. As Joker. We have Chavo, is that his name?
Yeah.
Right? As Chavo, as Bob the Goon. We have Stacey Keibler as Vicky Vale. Paul Bearer as the Penguin. Paige as Catwoman. Vince McMahon as Max Schreck. Roddy Piper as Two-Face. CM Punk as the Riddler. Tori Wilson as Dr. Chase Meridian. We have Jamie Noble as Dick Grayson. We have Rey Mysterio Jr., right, we said? Rey Mysterio Jr.
Yeah, and, that's you know, true, yeah.
As
yeah.
Robin. Brock Lesnar as Mr. Freeze. Jake the Snake as the
male
version of Poison Ivy. And we have Lita as Batgirl, and we have Big E Langston as Bane. Boom, comes naturally presents WWE's Tim Burton, Joel Schumacher, Batman run.
I want Kevin Smith to write the script for this. That would be so
okay.
epic.
Done.
Done. Or co-writing with us.
Yeah, whatever. Mm-hmm. Let him do the easy work. We already took care of the hard work.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, think the dialogue. Yeah.
We don't have to.
Yeah.
We gave you a roadmap.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now
we need impressions for you guys.
Yeah.
All right, so that does bring us to the end. So real quick, Ken, do you want to do any shout-outs for what's happening here at the shop that we can help you promote in the next coming weeks?
Going back to being normal Ken again. I will be hopefully. Like that. The annual chocolate festival is something that downtown Glendale does every year. They usually do it the weekend before Valentine's Day, but Super Bowl's here. And who doesn't want millions of people coming through their neighborhood to come watch football and do other stuff while there's things going on here from all around the country? Mm-hmm. So it's a great opportunity for Glendale to be in the spotlight. And every year they do the chocolate festival, so they've moved it back a weekend this year to participate with Super Bowl weekend. What we usually do is we call For the Love of Comics Festival, since it ties in with the whole Valentine's Day thing. And we bring down comic artists that come down and bring their art. They do signings for you if you have any of their books. We have Marat Michaels this year, who's a famous Deadpool artist. And we have John Stinsman, who worked on Evangeline with another Deadpool person that created both Deadpool and Evangeline. Like that, Rob Liefeld was the guy that created both Deadpool and Evangeline. But John Stinsman and Marat Michaels will be here this weekend. And also Jim Hanna, who is another local artist who's really good friends with Marat Michaels and John Stinsman. Then also Jacob Thomas, who is a very local writer teaching himself how to draw, and he's doing his own comics now too, so he'll be down here. And a Girl Scout troop will be here because there's cookies to be sold.
Okay. That's not reason enough, people.
Yeah.
Chocolate and Girl Scout cookies. Get a little comic art on the side.
And on Saturday, I don't know if you guys are familiar with a famous artist down here named Danae Frazier. Mm. But Danae Frazier, she does Star Wars trading card inserts. Oh. And she's an amazing artist when it comes to lifelike details. She did the Drawn to Comics Soulfire exclusive for the 10 for 10 that came out 2 years ago from Aspen Forest. Amazing, amazing person. I don't know if you guys ever visited the McFarlane store in the past, but her husband, Robert, he'll be there with her too as well. And Robert, he loves talking toys, comics, art. He's a super cool guy too. Hot Wheels, he knows his stuff. He's a really fun guy. They'll be there with Danae too as well. And he's more or less his promoter. But Danae has got all the talent in the world. So definitely come down and meet her.
Nice.
And real quick,
yes.
Just give the dates of the actual festival itself and the times when it usually starts kicking off down here in Glendale.
It's Friday, January 30th from 4 p.m. to close. And then Saturday we're going to do from 11 a.m. to about 8 p.m.
And the festival's going on both days, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's not on Sunday. And obviously Super Bowl, chocolate's cool, but Super Bowl is something that shuts out the lights everywhere around the country and the world, actually, not just our one country, but over, 136 countries, or I don't know how many countries we're talking, but watch Super Bowl, but it's a pretty big deal.
And so people who are local
say Super Bowl, don't have to call it the big game like every other radio station. Yep.
Nah, yeah. Say Super Bowl we're not a radio station. And just for people who are local that's never been to any of the events that they hold down here in downtown Glendale, it is a really cool setup. They'll have all kinds of food vendors. They'll have music.
It's pretty epic.
This one's chocolate theme. I actually took my wife to it last year. She had a blast. You can get super full on all kinds of good food. Food trucks are out. Bands are out. You can get beers if you want. And this one especially, tons of chocolate too.
Kin's
store is right smack dab in the middle of everything. So all the cool artists and stuff too. You can go and we'll pimp out the artist names.
Thank you, Mike, dude.
Later as well too. So come for everything. Check out the shop, meet some artists, and then just come in, say hi to Ken and the staff. These guys, not kissing your ass because you're here. We drive past multiple comic book stores every week
just to
come
here.
Mm-hmm. And it's because you guys heard his origin story, so you know why we do that. It's because he truly is one of those guys who will learn your name. He might not get it right the first three times to come in, but he will put the effort in, which is important. And the shop's great.
Eric's awesome, by the way, too. That's the other guy that I see come in with Joe, Mike, and Cody every week. And Joe's brother, Adam, took me a while to remember his name, so I'm glad I remember Adam's name finally, too.
Yeah, and nobody likes Adam, and he knows his name. So that should speak
that
to the fact.
Cody. Yeah. I was like waiting for Cody to say
but,
that.
But no, the shop's great. So come in, check out the selection, meet the artists, and then enjoy the festival this weekend too, just to give you another reason to come down here to Glendale.
Sounds good.
So
it's fun. It's like that's what I'm really blessed with. I mean, this area, I'm not a West Side guy. I hate saying that. The West Side's awesome, don't get me wrong. But I grew up on the east side of the valley. And it was always like, oh, man, there's nothing to do on the West Side. And I go, that's bullshit now. See what I mean? The West Side is grown up, and it's always been grown up. And I'm sure people said the West Side, those East Side snobs are a bunch of pricks. And it's just like that. No matter
we say
where
that about
you,
Scottsdale people.
Yeah, like where you're I know, it's like Scottsdale.
And people that work
down
there.
I went to Arcadia High School and Coronado High School. I mean, it was, how much worse can it get at that time in the 90s? I mean, Saguaro and Chaparral were the only other preppy schools in that area that were public schools. Mm. And it was like that. I left Arcadia. No disrespect. It's a great school. But I was not preppy enough to be at that school. And it was just one of those things like that. Hey, Dad, dude. it's like that. He was a counselor at Saguaro. And so it's like, let me go somewhere where I can excel and not just get caught up in all the stupid politics of school. It's like, if I'm supposed to learn, let's go somewhere where I can learn, not just sit there and be stuck in the... No disrespect to Arcadia students. There's some genius kids, but they're very wealthy kids too as well. And,
you scumbags.
And I was like the middle class kid in that school. And tangent, I apologize for going off the tangent, but it's, you appreciate the West Side people, to me, are much more genuine. And no disrespect to East Side people at all. East Side people, there's a lot of great people too, but I've made a lot of good relationships since opening the store. And I think that comes from the people, mm-hmm. not just from the product.
Nice.
So thank you guys just as much as you guys just thanked me.
Well, thank you. Yep. All right, so that's it. So come snatch, we are
Joe.
Mike.
I'm Cody. And I guess, again, our special guest was...
My name is Ken Brown. Thank you very much, guys.
All right. Thank you, sir. And we're out. So we'll see you next time. I won't do my normal one that I usually say.
What, fuck off?
Yeah, I usually say fuck off.
Fuck off, everybody.
Later.